A poll by the Jerusalem Centre for Public Affairs this week finds three-quarters of Jewish Israelis oppose the creation of a Palestinian state along the 1967 borders. The poll was taken by following the rise of Islamic State group in Iraq and Syria and the recent Israeli offensive in Gaza. The hardening of attitudes in the Israel-Palestine conflict not only makes a two-state solution that much harder, it has practical implications for life in Gaza and the occupied territories, especially if you're a young Palestinian who falls in love. Ada Agazarian works with the Young Women's Christian Association, the YWCA of Palestine, and she's been touring Australia, and she explained how she saw the situation.
The way that this particular conflict between Hamas and the Israelis has been portrayed in the media, unfortunately, has been giving too much focus on the word Hamas versus Israel. When we think about the conflict there, we think about Gaza as a place which, despite Hamas or not, there's more than 1.6 million people living there who, in a way, are also going through collective punishment. It's probably considered the most condensed part of the world right now, with more than 1.6 million people living there, and they pretty much can't go anywhere. So the question of the money going in for reconstruction also brings in other questions as well, as to how will the people living there have access to water or electricity or economy or employment or movement. People who live there cannot get out of there. We have seen documentaries through which you see actual tunnels underneath that the people have built for certain economy purposes, for import-export purposes, or maybe for people trying to get out of Gaza. It is really, really incredible to think that out of the over 1.6 million people living there, only 200 permits are issued per month. But those permits include all of the journalists as well as the non-governmental organizations. So what this means is that there probably are a lot of students in Gaza who are applying for scholarships, fully funded scholarships to study abroad, but they can never get out of Gaza. This is the situation that we're looking at right now.
You mentioned those tunnels, though, Ada. You know that the Israeli government claims that those tunnels are used for smuggling weapons, for Hamas fighters to creep into Israel to kidnap Israeli soldiers. I mean, they're multi-purpose from what you're saying, are they? They do have a humanitarian purpose?
Yes, this is what we get. The talk about rockets being smuggled from those tunnels, and that is a possibility for sure. But the bigger possibility is that there are a lot of biscuits that are also being taken between those tunnels, and cows and cars. It's very strange to think that at this day and age, this is the situation in Gaza today, with all those people not being able to go out, and most of the world is wondering why are they so angry. I believe that Gaza, not too long ago, even if we look 10, 15, perhaps 20 years ago, it did not have any problems of unemployment or poverty, because most of the residents of Gaza, this is something that people often forget, were actually the construction workers in Israel. However, after the siege of Gaza, this of course will present a big unemployment problem and a big poverty problem as well for the people who live there, without much access to get out and without access to economy or employment.
Well, what's your narrative, Ada? Because you live in the old city in East Jerusalem. Now, for many of us who've visited Jerusalem, it's almost a magical place, that old city. But I suspect that your narrative is not necessarily one of constant joy and magic of living in the old city.
To be honest, it comes in both ways. I personally have a love and hatred relationship towards Jerusalem, because while it is a very spiritual place, people who go to Jerusalem say that they never go back as the same people that they were. It's a very spiritual, ancient place that has gone through conflict for so many years. At the same time, it is not exactly a pleasant place to be in either, because it's a very heavy place. And unfortunately, a lot of the people who do live in Jerusalem are taken by that heaviness, and a lot of them end up feeling self-righteous about the place, perhaps of the fear of losing their identity that they see in Jerusalem as well. The people there, they walk with their symbols. And the problem is perhaps that each person feels like it is their place, or they get a little bit exclusive about what it means to them, hence not give space for the other, in a sense.
We should just point out, you're of Palestinian Christian Armenian background. That's one of the most ancient of all the Christian groups in the Holy Land, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's the first Christian nation, Armenia. My family was among those Armenians who have had to go to Jerusalem as a result of the persecution of the Armenian genocide that happened in the year 1915. However, Armenians have been very much part of Jerusalem for long, long, long before that. In fact, there are documentations that prove of the presence of Armenians in Jerusalem as far back as the year 300.
You have traveled in your work for the Young Women's Christian Association all across the West Bank. Give us a picture of the daily life of living under the occupation.
When people talk about the Palestinian territories or the West Bank from an Israeli point of view, often we imagine that it is somewhere far, far away. But a place like Bethlehem, for example, is part of the West Bank and it's only a 10-minute drive away from Jerusalem. Mm. However, what this means is that while the people from Jerusalem can have access to Bethlehem, of course, there's checkpoints that you have to cross and get checked and you have to have the right sort of permits. But the people who live in the West Bank, in places like Bethlehem, Ramallah, Nablus, Jericho, and elsewhere, regardless of whether or not they're Christian or Muslim, regardless of their political affiliations, regardless of how they look at the political situation, the fact that they're there with Palestinian passports would mean that they would never be allowed to enter a place like Jerusalem or Tel Aviv or the rest of it. So what this means is that the people who live in the West Bank would not be allowed to travel through Ben Gurion Tel Aviv Airport. They wouldn't even be allowed to enter Tel Aviv. They wouldn't be allowed to enter Jerusalem unless they have a very good justification, and mostly that would be a serious medical condition of some sort.
And there are even more very personal things about the slicing and dicing of the West Bank that you point out, things that really literally go to the heart, and that is for Christians in the minority in the Holy Land, the idea of finding a spouse, falling in love with someone, can have all sorts of political implications, can't it? Because it comes down to identity papers and all the problems that might arise from that.
Absolutely. And this is something that I focus on when I talk about this situation. The truth is, when people talk about the situation in the Middle East, the Palestine-Israel conflict, everybody gets busy talking about the one-sidedness of it. You know, which side are you on? What do you think? One state, two state, and all of that. But we rarely pay attention to what does it really mean to be in such conflict areas? What does it really mean to be living inside Palestine? Because absolutely, it affects relationships. It affects basic things within the relationship. So for instance, for someone from Jerusalem who comes from a Christian background to get in a relationship with someone from, say, Bethlehem with another person from a Christian background, that relationship is going to be very, very problematic because the person in Bethlehem cannot even enter Jerusalem, much less live there. How will this relationship be affected by the political structure? It will be affected in every way in terms of where can they live? Is it legal for them to live together? What would happen to the children? Where would these children be born? Because if they're born behind the wall, different story than if it's inside. So all of these elements of life end up being part of living inside this very heavy political context.
Ada Agazarian of the YWCA of Palestine, ending this edition of the Religion and Ethics Report. And you can find our stories online at the RN website. You can leave a comment, tweet with us at ABC Religion. Next week, psychologist Lazar Stankov of Australian Catholic University discussing his research on the mindset of violent extremists, religious and secular.